You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen, and you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we speak with Jen Hinman, a hunter-jumper trainer for more than 30 years who was able to purchase her own farm and start a side business to diversify her career.
Originally from the Chicago area, Jen Hinman has more than 30 years in the saddle and as a trainer. After working for top professionals such as Kip Rosenthal, Jen started her own Sweetwater farm in 1992. She was able to eventually purchase land 30 years later in North Salem, New York, and base at her own facility. Sweetwater Farm is a boutique training operation that specializes in adult riders who want to show in the Northeast United States.
Jen and her business partner, Wendy Hammond, started H&H Horse and Home 10 years ago out of a need for new and interesting equine-inspired fabrics. They source vintage artwork from all over the world to turn into one-of-a-kind designs to use for bespoke textiles, custom upholstery, and equine coolers. The collection features a delightful range of equine-inspired home designs, from beautiful wallpaper and fabric to lovely dishes. During their travels, Jen and Wendy uncover unique treasures that add a special charm to their vendor booth. Hi, friends. Connor here. I want to take a quick minute to tell you about my new endeavor. My partner Chelsea and I have developed the first peer-to-peer equestrian clothing rental marketplace. Think Airbnb for those unused clothes sitting in your closet. It's simple. You're going to rent, ride, and return. We're excited to connect equestrian closets across the country, helping to make equestrian fashion more affordable, accessible, and sustainable. So start cleaning out those closets and make some extra horse money. Check out ridersrent.com.
So today we are welcoming a third Jen into the Equestrian B2B podcast to make it extra confusing for everyone. But no, we're really happy to have our friend Jen Hinman on. Jen has been a big help to us at Equestrian Businesswomen at the Saratoga Women in Business Spectacular. And we've loved having lots of conversations about the industry and women in the industry. So we wanted to have her on the podcast so you could all listen in as well. So Jen, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And can you tell us kind of what got you started on the path of being in the equestrian industry?
Sure. I, unlike other people who didn't have horsey parents at all, rode as a kid out in Chicago in the Midwest area.
Oh, yeah.
And wanted to ride intercollegiate and knew Kip Rosenthal. And yeah, she got me hooked up with Pace University in Westchester County, right down here. And went there and rode intercollegiate and got a job working at Sleepy Hollow Country Club for Pam Freely. And I did that for a couple of years, and it was supposed to be a part-time gig, and the part-time gig turned into a 75-hour-a-week gig. And
as they do at horses.
As they always do. And I basically, you know, thought about it and was like, I was making decent money, and compared to my other 22-year-old friends. And I called my dad and I was like, I think I can do this for a living. And in the beginning, I went to school, history, poli sci. I was going to be an attorney. And he's like, what about law school? And I'm like, looked at my LSATs, did like, you know, the pre LSAT test. I was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
And I was so sick of school at that point. And so I hung out a shingle. Oh, got it. 92. So a long time ago, and I came up to North Salem and rented stalls. I had met Phil Ake through Pam, and I rented a few stalls, and I bought a school horse and got a few customers, and that's how it started. And I basically, and then I mentored with Pam for 3 or 4 years, obviously, and then worked for her. And then Phil was very instrumental about like being like, you know, we call him Uncle Phil for a reason. You know, very, very nice. It kind of helping me start off and showing me the ins and the outs and how it should go. So that's how I got into it. Cool. No, it was definitely, I was not born into the business at all.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
But you know, it's so funny to me. So many equestrians talk about how they were thinking about being a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like so many equestrians are like, well,
I took the LSAT too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think it's because we all like to talk and argue our case. But yeah, I took those pre-LSATs and I was like, oh, no, not doing it. Can't do it. And I was like, well, maybe I'll come back to it. That was a long time ago.
That's what I said too.
And still haven't. And still haven't done any of that.
And so throughout the years of being a trainer, have you always just had that one business as a trainer? Or how have you maybe diversified or have different jobs that you do?
So I very quickly, when I wrote my first rent check to Phil, went, whoa. I need to become Phil. And, you know, seeing him owning the facility and collecting a rent check, I was like, that's the kicker that is very difficult to do in this area. But if I thought if I could figure out how to own the barn, then this would be a better way to make money. With that being said, it took me from 92 to 2012 to figure out how to do that. Wow. You know, you needed money, obviously, and you needed, I learned also from moving around to different barns, which happens a lot in our industry. Location is everything. And so to be able to buy in North Salem, I sort of needed the stars to be in alignment and lightning to strike, which it did. I got very lucky on that one. And I bought this farm in 2012 and we moved the horses in 2013. So then I went from also being a horse trainer to being a horse trainer that owned the facility. And Val Renahan and I had become very good friends over the years, and Val moved right in. So I have, I wouldn't say taken a back seat, but I definitely have gone down from, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I started doing this, at one point, there were 24 horses with me on the road. And then now I have 8 here.
Yeah.
So I've scaled it down a little bit to be able to manage the facility. And then in the process of buying this, so if you don't know the area, I bought a very, very old house. Mm-hmm. I am the second owner since 1886.
Wow.
Yeah. And the house was full of stuff, for lack of a better word. And I had to get rid of it all. So I was starting to sell and then buy more stuff and sell. And then I'm like, whoa, I have an idea. And that's when the antiquing, repurposing idea kind of came up. A good friend of mine, Wendy Hammond, and I, we started H&H, oh my God, 8 or 9 years ago now. And it's now just me, but we started doing, you know, recovering furniture and selling antiques. And then, you know, the fabric that was out there wasn't great. And so then we started coming up with the idea of designing our own fabric. And that's where it sort of took off at that point. So now I have the H&H business and I have, you know, the whole farm here that I run. And I trained the 8 horses in the barn. So yeah, there's a lot of different hats that get put on. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys were mentioning like, is that, there's a lot of things that get forgotten. I have to write everything down. I am one of those people.
Me too.
If I write it down, it's like ingrained in my memory. If I don't write it down, I don't have a fighting chance at all. But I definitely encourage, I guess, people to diversify. And diversifying in this business, I don't think it has to be that you sell antiques or do anything else, but diversify even if just being a horse trainer. So, right. You know, maybe you think you only want to do the big at kids. Maybe you want to think about doing adults. Maybe you want to think about doing this. You know, I think our industry is hard, guys, because a lot of people I've seen over the years have trouble finding their niche, huh? Mm-hmm. Their lane to be in. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but you know, you end up falling on your ass every once in a while because, you know, you kind of get above, I don't want to say your pay scale, but that's basically what it is. There are, you know, trainers out there that we see them every day that are trying to take kids into the Metal McClay and to do stuff like that without having another trainer that may be like a mentor mm-hmm. type situation. You know, when you don't have that, I find they struggle, or I've seen them struggle. I went to Kip.
Yeah.
When I was starting out, and Kip helped me. And that it didn't always work out in my favor, by the way. but I learned what to do, and I learned a lot from her. And then I sort of, as I went along, I mean, then I got to a point after those 24 and bringing them down, I like doing the kids, but I don't want to do them all the time anymore. I love doing the adult ladies. That's a good niche. It fits into my schedule, having to juggle everything else, because then it kind of frees up. They all basically either ride first thing in the morning or they ride after work. So it frees up my afternoon to do H&H and to do the managing of the horse farm and to do that kind of stuff. But I definitely think it's something that, and I'm sure, I don't know if you guys even pay attention to that on any way, shape or form, but to watch some of these younger trainers come up through the ranks and they struggle to find their niche. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's cool to take the kids to the Metal McClay kids to indoors and do that kind of stuff. They pay just as much money as the adult 2-6 rider does.
Right. Yeah.
The board isn't different. So, and you have to work, at least what I found. I mean, it's tremendous amount of work doing the big act kids, right?
From yes.
getting them qualified, going to indoors, doing finals. And that's sort of how Val and I became really good friends is I kind of went to her at the end when I had 3 equitation kids. And she basically would help me with those kids. And I would put the horses in the trailer and they'd go, I'd bring them over to Val and she would give them lessons and, you know, co-trained with me and kind of helped me in an area that maybe I didn't have as good of a skill set as I needed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she also, vice versa, if one of those kids couldn't go to Florida, they stayed with me for the winter. I don't mind doing them in the winter. It's much easier. And, you know, and then, you know, we always commingled it that way. And it has always worked out very well between Val and I that way.
I love that.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about, you know, being honest with yourself about what your limitations are, mm-hmm. whether it's how much you know, how much time you have, how much money you have.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it definitely applies to being a trainer. And we've talked a lot about like what you did with Val. It is, you know, finding someone who is in another lane where you can each refer clients to each other. So that's cool to hear. That's something you've done too.
Yeah, no. And because it like Kip, may she rest in peace. Kip stole 2 of my customers. I mean, it happens, right? So you learned your lesson at that point that you were like, maybe I'm going to think before I do that again. Which was, you know, listen, it's always going to do this. It's always going to be a roller coaster. There's
yeah.
always going to be ups and there's always going to be downs. And you've got to be able to not panic. keep your head above water, you know, keep your eye on the prize, and, you know, it too will work out. But it's definitely hard. And Val she's done that with other people also in the business. She's quite good at that. And she's not, I mean, she has enough on her plate. So, you know, she loves kind of helping and, you know, mentoring. And, you know, now I'm part of the family. I'm the little Renahan sister. So it's definitely something I value that a lot, because I don't think it happens as much as it needs to out there.
Yeah, definitely agree with you. I mean, and like, back to being honest with yourself, I think it was our first episode that we had somebody on talking about that. Like, her lane was, she really liked nervous riders to help them overcome their fear, and that was her niche, and she liked
that. What's her name?
I don't think she's training anymore.
We could always sign a few up for that one, huh?
yeah, but you know, like, she liked to people who were beginners and were nervous, and that was her niche, and it was nice that she recognized that. And right from the get-go, that was a theme with equestrian businesswomen, is really trying to recognize that about yourself, because you're right, I see it all the time. I see these young trainers coming in, and you know, I'm a pretty experienced rider. I grew up in the industry, harness racing, but I grew up riding my whole life. My mom went to Europe and did her horse master certification and stuff over there. So I've ridden my whole life, and I don't feel like I'm qualified, nor do I want to, because I want to keep my amateur status. But there are things that people are doing that I'm like, I don't feel I'm qualified, and I know I've done a lot more. I rode in the Big X, you know, I didn't go to indoors or whatnot, but I still competed in them, and it was fairly competitive in our area. And so right. I'm like, you didn't, like, what are you doing to improve yourself and learn, and who are you learning from to be able to be qualified to get to the next level?
That learning from, that's a big one, huh? So I think what I see is people do a business deal with, okay, Susie and Sally do a business deal together. They buy a horse from each other, whatever. Then Sally kind of starts mentoring Susie because they sold that deal. And that isn't always, like, I've watched that happen and I'm like, maybe that's not the lane to go in. It's hard, almost impossible to look back at yourself and self-reflect and say, I'm in over my head, but I need this customer, and, you know, I want to do something right by them. Sometimes the right thing to do is to let them go.
Right.
You know? I mean, if you need to concentrate, if you've got a Big X kid, one Big X kid, and the rest of your business is a 3 foot and under business, but it's thriving and your Big X head is struggling, right? So it only because she's not getting the exposure she needs. It's hard to say it, but what, you know, what's the expression? You know, if you love something, let it go. sometimes you got to pass it along.
Yeah.
And like I said, with Val, it's always sort of, you didn't really have to pass it along permanently. You know, right. It's always just been, she's helped out. And there's, you know, plenty of times now over the years where, you know, I'll take the kids to a horse show locally because she's off doing something else. Or, you know, I'm going here, you take them, you go this way, you know, divide and conquer. And I just wish it happened more in this industry. Or maybe there was a way to have like a mentoring program, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we talked about, and you guys brought up, things I love or don't love in the industry. And I think the amount of horse trainers that we have out there that maybe could benefit, for lack of a better word, from some tutelage from a more seasoned professional.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do you mandate that?
Right.
How do you insist that happens? If only for the benefit of the customer and the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought it was cool that, you know, I worked with some trainers that had a smaller business or didn't, you know, have the best horses to go to the biggest shows, but they were riding in clinics with other trainers, or they were taking me to go and audit a clinic with, you know, some of the best in the business. And I think that shows, you know, that you're with someone good who's trying to learn more and
better,
yeah, do it right.
As a person in general, if you see anybody that's trying to better themselves as a human being, that's a good characteristic to have, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, for sure.
But I also look at it, you know, I think in today's times, look what we're doing right now, social media and the WWW out there doing, you know, now you can basically, you know, look at clinics and watch other people and listen to other people teach, and you never have to leave your couch.
Yeah.
You don't have to sacrifice your business. And, you know, back in our day, it was, you had to leave or give up teaching lessons to, you know, go and audit a clinic.
Right.
You know, or you had to, you know, and that was always tough for, like, you know, you need to make rent money. I mean, you had to, you know, be in there slogging away, teaching those lessons, you know, from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, straight through, because that's how you paid the rent. So you couldn't really, you didn't have time, nor did you have the wherewithal to be able to go and better yourselves by, you know, auditing a clinic or going and taking a lesson, you know, throwing the horse in the truck, like your personal professional horse, that whether it be your pre-green horse or something, but you go and take a lesson from another professional that, you know, and you always try to, you know, pay it forward, so to speak, I guess. So, you know, I always giggle that during Old Salem, because that's, you know, queen of the iceberg circuit here, that you end up, you know, professional day is, you know, usually Thursdays and Fridays, right? So if I'm over there doing one horse and I don't, you know, now that I have the farm and I have like a couple hours, I'll set jumps for every single professional in there and help put everybody in the ring, you know? And now everyone kind of, like, I'll get a phone call. Are you going to be there? Sure, I'll be there. Like, you know, I've got an extra hour. It's not a big deal for me to sit here and set jumps for, you know, the 6 pre-green horses, you know? So it's almost, you know, like, and we're all at, especially in that little tight-knit community, right? It's not like WAF or, you know, WAC at Ocala, where there's so many people. We know everybody. So it's easier on that kind of that kind of thing. Definitely.
So can we go back to talking a little bit about your H&H business? Like, what's good about it? What's bad about it? Like, what do you learn from it?
The H&H, I love the H&H business. I have to tell you, that is like my secret weapon that I really, really hope at some point, retirement maybe, that I could do it a little bit more and on a little bit of a different scale. It's kind of funny, but it's not funny. You only see your customers for like 5 minutes. And it's that part of it is kind of interesting. I love looking at it. Like the first couple of vendor shows I did, you know, where I was a vendor, seeing the world from that point of view at a horse show is very interesting. Like, I don't know if there's another trainer rider that has a vendor business. I don't know of one. Maybe there is. If there is, someone call me, because I'd love to, you know, it's hard sometimes, especially like a cap challenge. I know the back way to the ring, you know, I literally put a sign up that I'm in the ring and call me and, you know, like change your shoes, run down through the woods and over the rocks to the ring and then turn around and come back up. You know, how many times am I like running? So then I have, they're like, Jen, you want to give the award? I'm like, sure. Run around the corner, change my clothes again, go running down the stairs, present the trophy. So that's the one horse show now, right now, that I do and I look forward to, because I really don't do a boatload of it right now other than online stuff and doing that. But Capital Challenge is the 2 weeks that's all I concentrate on, is being a vendor for 2 weeks. Occasionally there's the horse that I have to do, but it's not like I take the whole barn anymore. I basically just one, maybe either it's my horse or I'm helping someone else. But that that is definitely the best part, and it is super fun. Anything negative about it? I don't know if there's that much negative about it. Vendors, it is a lot more work than people think about. But then again, being in the horse industry, there's nothing easy about this business.
Oh, no.
Nothing. Whether you're a horse trainer, whether you're just an instructor, whether you're a judge, none of it is easy. None of it. You know, it's sort of...
It's the nature of the business.
Yeah. For some reason, it's just very incredibly time consuming. And, you know, being a vendor, so you have to schlep everything in, set everything up. I'm always like, oh, maybe I should have gotten into like the jewelry business.
Yeah, because they come in with a suitcase and open it up and
literally,
not giant antiques.
One bag. I have to come in and set up a whole entire house.
Yeah. Right.
I have walls and furniture and oh, it's heavy. So that part is definitely daunting. And whenever I have to set it up again, you know, it's all usually different stuff. So it's literally, there's a lot. It takes, where every other vendor I think sets up and maybe it takes them all day. And they usually have more than just themselves. I have help bringing everything in, but then it's 2 full days. 2 days,
wow.
Me sitting there going, holding up a picture going, where does this go? You know, and I have like an idea in my head and I try to set like themes and, you know, so we do this kind of a theme or this kind of a story, as they would call it over here, and this kind of a story over here. I would eventually like it, you know, it would be great if, you know, I win the lotto, I guess. But if I could have like a tractor trailer, you know, those people that are permanent vendors, where, you know, it folds down and all the walls are there and it'd be a lot easier. But then I'd have no room for the furniture. So I've had this, it's a yin and a yang. you know, I really want, so I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the fabric that we put on the coolers and the scrims that Katrina at the Clothes Horse does with me. And I love finding the old artwork that we turn into some sort of a fabric pattern. So it has to, you have to be able to kind of look at the picture. I can't lay it out on the computer. That is totally above my pay scale. But I have a girl that does it for me. And then, you know, we tweak it in size so I can now, you know, put it on the stripe with Katrina and I can do it in everybody's colorways. And so doing that kind of stuff. And now this year we came up with a whole dish line, which I love, love, love. So I took those old vintage etchings and each different etching I put on a plate.
Oh,
so a 10 inch bone china goes in the dishwasher plate that you could do. And I have 12 different flavors. So it's like a service of 12 and you can have 12 different pictures.
That's cool.
Oh yeah. So Jimmy at the Ingate is carrying those with me. And I love that. Love anything that has to do with the table setting. Like I love setting a table and doing that kind of stuff and the fabric. And we can do anything on it. Like I did an espadrille line this year that's super cute that's gonna come out at Cap Challenge.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, shoes. I was like, I don't know why I went that way, but I did. It's just interesting these days what you can do with old vintage artwork, huh? And that's how it started.
Yeah. And it's all equestrian themed? Like everything you do, or do you mix it up?
I personally don't, like, I don't have a lot of horsey stuff in my house.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it's not like you walk in and bump into horses everywhere. There are horse themes, but not like I walk into horse people's houses sometimes and I'm like, wow. But yeah, so it's not all horsey, but obviously a lot of it is. But farm, eclectic, fun kind of stuff. But yes, I love anything that would have to do with a cow, a sheep, a goat, a pig, even on occasion. So yeah, you kind of figure out what sells and what doesn't sell too very quickly.
Do you think that creativity and having to figure out the retail business has helped you in other ways?
Oh, good question. I Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty good at the finances and the money, but the retail part of it, I've always sort of, I would, as my father would say, I'd talk to the wall if the wall would talk back. so I'm pretty good at, you know, chatting it up with people. If you are not chatty and you don't have that personality, being in retail is, you're never going to get anywhere. Like, yeah. You've got to be able to, you know, the gift of gab out there a little bit to just get people, you know, because a lot of people, they, especially in that, in our, my booth, there's a story pretty much behind every single thing there. And if there isn't, don't worry, I'll make it my vendor business that I picked. I think it's eventually, hopefully, will just be sort of those horse shows. So, and I think those horse shows are ones that would do well with what I sell.
Yeah, it's your audience.
Yeah, and it's just, it's never worked out timing-wise. And next year, maybe the Hampton Classic's going to be on the radar screen for next year. I've reached out to them just a little bit over in the past, but it's never been timing, like I either, not here, or, you know, I can't get there. And like Devin, next year, I actually will be, I'm getting married in Italy.
Congrats.
So I will not be able to do Devin next year. So, but definitely hope to maybe get the classic in. Because usually we have a family thing we do usually during the classic every year. So hopefully next year, hopefully.
You do all sorts of different things. Well, I mean, you sound super passionate about H&H, and then you're managing the farm and you have the horses. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, you have to stay focused. Do you think that you're splitting your focus, or are you focused on things individually? Do you think it's okay to have this diversity and put your energy in different places?
For me, it works. I definitely, like the H&H thing, I definitely gets put on the back burner. Because it is not my main source of income.
Right.
It's better close right now. It is more of like fun. And, you know, I use whatever, you know, proceeds we make from that just to basically go right back in. And, you know, they pay for those great buying trips in Paris. So that part is sort of how that turns that cycle. Yes, obviously, first and foremost, the horses and the customers come first, and managing the farm. I mean, those are my two main sources of, you know, keeping the lights on, right? So that's what has to get its the main focus. But yeah, I kind of, all my customers that are here know that for 2 weeks during Cap Challenge, I am out. So, you know, there's someone I can always pull in here that will teach for me and help out. But it's definitely, that's the only time of the year right now that I have to solely focus.
You brought up an important point, though, is that you're always aware of your finances, where your money's coming from, and that dictates your time for now.
Yeah, it does. And you know, you guys had thought about that, and when we talked earlier about the finances in this industry, I think it is so important, and I wish maybe the USDF has thought about this, or maybe there's, I'm sure maybe there's someone there, but there should be a panel or a committee set up for people in this industry, doesn't matter how old you are, that how to manage their money as best you possibly can.
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, my parents aren't horsey and my dad is fairly successful at what he did, but you know, that I didn't even really, he didn't really get into it with me about, and he should have, about, we've talked about this before, Roth IRAs and how to do this and being able to put money aside, because when you're 25 years old, you do not, you think 65 is a million years away, and it's not. And, you know, if you could explain to every kid these days, and also I think social media and the internet are much better at this, that, you know, hopefully, you know, putting $100 or something like that away a month into a Roth IRA, by the time you go to retire, there's over $1 million tax-free sitting there. And that was never brought up with me, and it should have been.
Yeah.
And it, someone should have a gun to my head saying, you need to put the $100 in every single month. Do not. And I it fell on deaf ears. I didn't listen. And if that is one thing that happens, I think, you know, young professionals, it really, you know, you always think about, oh, you know, let's put the money in and go buy a new horse, or let's do that. If you can save your money and get yourself so you own the farm that you're putting your clients at, it's huge. It is a game changer beyond game changer. And I understand in certain areas, like Westchester County, New York, it is incredibly expensive. And especially now, right? Everything's skyrocketed out of control. Be patient. What goes up must come down. And when it does, you need to be able to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
And it's...
have that money saved for a down payment.
Yeah. You know, or being able to, you know, even if it's someplace that's for sale, and I don't care where in the country you live, that maybe you can rent with an option to buy, you know, own. I mean, there are a lot of people that are maybe older and want to get out from underneath their farm, because let's get real, they're expensive and horses are destructive, and, you know, you're constantly repairing things. And every 20 years, everything needs to be redone. So, you know, but if you could, you know, somebody might be willing to hold back the note for you, and being able to get you to, you know, eventually be able to stroll in and own the facility you're at, you know, then you're putting that rent money in your pocket every month. You know?
Yeah, I'm a total business nerd. So I listen to a lot of business podcasts, and people have really creative ways of acquiring businesses, especially now where people are retiring and getting out of different businesses, that they will hold the note. You know, they want it, their kids don't want it, or they don't have kids, and you know, they don't want to see the business just go away. So they're willing to do some, get creative with people. I listened to a girl who bought like an egg carton company, and she put zero money down, and it's worth like $12 million or more.
I love that.
Yeah.
My father always told me, if you serve to the masses, you will live with the classes.
Huh.
If you serve to the classes, you most likely will end up living with the masses. And unfortunately, you have to remember, serving the riding, especially what we do, girls, this level, a lot of times we are catering to very wealthy individuals. So, you know, and they, even though board sounds expensive, right? You hear the price of how much it costs to board a horse. It's all expensive. It's just relative to where you live.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what hay costs and what this costs. I mean, and it's, I always find it interesting when the customers, you know, when, by the time you paid for the box, and then you paid for the help that has to take care of your horse and your insurance and your hay and your shavings and your grain, at the end of the day, we make nothing on board.
Yeah, right.
It's like pennies compared to when we sell a horse or go to a horse show. Now, that's the other thing you can own, right? You can own your own truck and trailer. Now, instead of putting your horse in, you know, DJs or, you know, Danny or Pony Express or any of those guys, even though love them all dearly. But, you know, now if you have your own truck and trailer, now granted, they would tell you, you need to have insurance and you need to make sure you cover your bases. But at least when you're putting, even if you put your own horses in it, at least you're not, it's money that you're saving.
Yeah.
Right. My truck and trailer, my first truck and trailer, I'll never forget this. I had no money. And I bought a truck and trailer, and I swear to God, I think the loan on it was like, is more than a house. It was ridiculous, but it was because they made the payments so that I could afford them.
Yeah.
Right. For a brand new truck and trailer. So, I mean, it took me forever to pay that off, but it also paid for itself and put like grocery money in my pocket. You guys, one of the other things we were going to hit on was, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly in this industry, I guess. But there was definitely, you know, we talked about, you know, the things that I would like to do or regulations of some sort. I mean, I wrote that down because I kind of feel that, and I don't even know how you would enforce it, because, and maybe regulations is not the right word to use, but some sort of a governing system that would make sure that the professionals in this industry are professional. Because you just can hang out your shingle and say, hi, I'm a horse trainer. Oh, and yeah. It's a dangerous sport. And it goes without saying, I mean, we don't talk about it much, but you can get seriously hurt doing this, even when you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're dealing with a live animal that weighs on average, let's go 1200 pounds and has a brain the size of a walnut. So it makes it really hard. It's that inevitable unknown variable in our industry. So when you have professionals, and I use that word loosely, that hang out a shingle and call themselves a horse trainer, it is a recipe for disaster a lot of the times. And I've watched it, you know, and, you know, we came up with a trainer certification system years ago. Mm-hmm. You guys remember that? And it was never mandatory. And I will actually, you know, throw a stone at myself. I never did it. And I guess I felt, I don't know, I guess I felt maybe I didn't need to do it. But at that point, I had a fairly successful business going at that point. And that was another one of those, you know, you had to spend time doing it to get the certification. It wasn't, questions and answers online or, you know, doing that kind of a thing. And it was, you know, time and money. That when that became it was kind of a popular thing for a while, but at that point in my business, I couldn't afford to walk away from it for days, whatever it was, a couple days, a day or two. At that point, it was just never going to fall into, it never worked into the calendar because you were too busy doing that. But I think it's important somehow, some way, eventually that, I mean, these people that shouldn't be out there, that shouldn't be professionals, I think eventually time catches up with them, right?
Yeah.
Eventually they're not in the business anymore because it didn't work out for them. But I think it's sad that people have to get hurt, horses have to get injured because we don't have any stipulations on and regulations on what it is to be a professional in this industry.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of industries where you can just literally give the USEF money and become professional. Nobody asks. There's not a question that says, well, what have you done in your riding career or who have you worked for or who are you mentored with? Nope. Just push the button.
So I am not a judge, but at one point I had looked into maybe becoming a judge and there were certain qualifications for that are so much more than if you're going to be a trainer.
Yes, there are. And I have my judge's card and I do not have my big R because of it. I got into trouble. Well, I didn't get in trouble, but I opened my mouth. I'm sure you're not shocked to hear that at my last judge's clinic. And Tony Scarlotta was like, here we go. I was like, I don't want my big R because it doesn't pay. Mm-hmm. They do not pay enough. Judges don't get paid enough. End of story. And Adele Einhorn and I have sat down and she is like, I will show you everything. And we can't afford to pay these guys more. And I'm like, there's got to be a way. You've got to be able to find. And we're not talking a lot more, guys. We're talking instead of whatever a big R is making. And maybe a top big R is walking away with $600-$700 a day. And they're getting fed and they're getting their hotel room. You can be a professional and take a couple people to a horse show and make more than that.
Right. So
that's very difficult for me to handle. I was like, it's at least and let me tell you, it is an unforsaken job. It is hard.
Yes.
Really hard. You talk about focus.
Yeah.
It's beyond focus, right? It's too hot, too cold. You know, depending on where you're judging. I mean, the quality is, you know, it's just a mathematical problem half the time judging. And at the end of the day, to walk away with, as I've learned, $599. Do you know why? Because you don't get a 1099 if you make under $600. So that's what I get paid when I do a one-day show, $599. Even if I'm there for, and it's been plenty of times, you get there at 7:30 in the morning and you're there till 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
Yep.
There's no way.
Yeah.
I said,
yeah,
at least has to be $1,000. And now, if you're doing a one day, I totally understand if you're there for a couple hours and there's only 30 horses, whatever, and you drove 45 minutes, fine. You know, $300 or $400, you're good to go, right? No big deal. But if you're there for 5 days, right? So think about it. You've given up your, whatever your other job is, you've given up your other job, or you have to pay someone to be you, then mm-hmm. you're only making $700, $3,500. Now you got to take out tax. What are you making? Unless you're financially secure and don't need a job, or you're retired, right?
Yeah.
And that's what people always say. I always hear people say, oh, well, I'm going to get my judge's card. So when I can't ride or teach, I can be a judge. And I'm like, you're going to be old and be in that box all day long? No way.
Sitting in uncomfortable chairs.
It's not even that. Like, it is. And if until weather. You've done it, and everyone thinks it's until you put on that hat, it is not it is super not easy.
Yeah.
I defy you to judge the small, medium children's pony. Let's give it a show. Ready? Sagaponack out in Long Island, 2 weeks before the Hamptons. And there are 25 in the undersaddle and half of them are white.
Yeah. You're trying to see the number.
And now you're going to be older, right? You're going to be retired. Yeah. You can barely see. You have to have your print that big. Yeah. And you can't see far away either. I mean, it's, you literally, you might as well just throw it up against the wall. Whatever sticks, that's who's first. It's, and then they'll have, oh, don't worry. They'll call from the in-gate to tell you that you got it wrong.
Right.
Everybody has an opinion. So I do not want my big R. I'd much rather be a vendor as a result. because it is not for everybody. And there are a handful, Linda Andrasani, may she rest in peace. She, amazing at it. Amazing. Carrie Campson, fan-flippantastic. If you have a photographic memory, it's game. Right now, this is easy, and you can recall like this. Those people are brilliant at it, and it's really probably not work for them. Right. That is not my skill set. I do not have a photographic memory. I struggle to focus that hard for that long and not get distracted because there's constant distractions all day long at a horse show, you know. So it is very, and then you're putting your opinion out there, which I don't know, I guess your feelings are, someone's going to disagree with you horribly.
Yes.
Right.
You know, always. And you got to defend your opinion. Mm. If we raised the bar and gave these people more money, can you imagine how many people that would be good at it, right? Have that skill set, have that recall, can focus like that. There would be so many more people who throw their hat in the ring to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's so many people that can't afford to throw their hat in the ring for $599. They can't do it, you know, because they could bring literally, they could ship out to a one day with two horses on the truck and make more and be out of there in 2 hours.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's financially, it is not set up the way they've set the system up at the USEF right now. We are set up for failure to get good judges.
But there's a program, right, that you have to do to become the judge, but oh, yeah, you don't have to do a program to become a trainer. Yeah.
Now it's changed. But then there were all these rules. Okay, if you wanted your big R, at that point there was rules that you had to do. You had to judge for so many years or so long, right? Until you could actually apply. That now is totally gone away. You can go from little R, from what I've heard, maybe I'm wrong, you can go from little R whoop, right into your big R. I don't think that should happen. I think you should have to be forced into the trenches and go sit down and go judge Sagaponic with 22 ponies and the children's, and they're all white. And then go, oh crap, I might not be very good at this. You know, I mean, maybe this isn't for me, or maybe it is for me. I think you should have to test the waters a little bit, you know, because even when you're learner judging, you don't really have the final say yet. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then there was always, oh, well, then you have to do this, this, and this to be onto your big R. But then when I was doing it, all of a sudden there were certain people that didn't do anything. It's because, you know, they maybe won a ribbon at medal finals. They got to get to write to their big R. And I'm like, excuse me, what part of winning medal finals or getting a ribbon at equitation finals makes you a good judge?
Right. It doesn't translate.
Yeah.
Not in my opinion, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. They might know they're looking at, you know, that one swapped off and that one, you know, cross canter two stripes. They know what they're looking at, but to be able to keep a card, right? And be able to know where to put them all in the order and where that all goes, that's impossible. I mean, it's hard to do. Like I said, it is not for the faint of heart. And I think until we offer more money, we're not going to get the people that I think are good. There's a lot of people out there that I think would be very good at it, but they can't afford to do it.
Great talking about different aspects of the industry and, you know, hearing about your different businesses as well. I think it's cool to talk to professionals like you to show people what else can be done in the industry and, you know, the advice that you can give to younger professionals as well.
You guys do a great job. And I really think getting people talking about different things and different, because I think some people are uncomfortable talking about certain things, but getting it out there is, you know, the more we talk about it, hopefully the more things will change.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah.
For the better.
So at the end of each episode, we ask the same questions to our guests and
our Connor starts
with the first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? We say rapid fire and then they never end up rapid fire. We just talk and talk. But go ahead, Connor.
Okay. So what is your unfair advantage over others?
Okay. This is funny because we touched on this, but I honestly don't think I have an unfair advantage over anybody. But if you wanted to say I had one, the fact that I'm 5'10" is helpful. It's helpful to ride a horse. It's helpful to see the course chart. It's helpful when you're walking the lines. It's that part is.
Okay.
I would say your ability to talk is also an unfair advantage. A lot of people don't have that ability.
True. The gift of gab is not for everyone, but it also is probably, it's a double-edged sword. It can get me in trouble too sometimes.
Yeah.
It definitely can.
And so what's something worth fighting for and what is something worth giving up?
That's when I read that, that's a good question. Worth fighting for is always, in my opinion, if you can get back or you can time.
Yeah.
Time is something you don't think about when you're younger, but when you get older, it is precious.
Yes.
And you don't realize, I mean, at the end of the day, how many times do you turn around? You're like, shit, I got nothing done today. Nothing. That's worth fighting for. If you can give yourself more time, that's, you know, you can't get it back.
Right.
On. And then what was something worth giving up other than letting drama go?
Yes.
Yeah.
This industry is very, very unfortunately plagued the barns, you know, as the barn turns, so do the tides of our lives. and I think with social media, it's probably worse. You know, I'm not a huge social media person. It's probably not for the H&H business, it's probably a bad thing that I'm not very good at it. But I think I stay out of the fray of the drama because I'm not very into the social media. And I'm sure you guys have seen it. There's, you know, a lot of people can be real mean.
Yeah.
Especially when they're not face to face.
For sure.
A lot easier when you're doing it from behind a screen, so to speak. So yeah, I would like to give up the drama. That would be lovely. If
we yep.
Give that up.
I love that. What has been your favorite age so far?
I love this question. This is my favorite question, by the way. I got to tell you, I'm going to say the minute I bought this farm and the way, because I don't know if you haven't been here, but there was nothing here. So we kind of had to build the whole thing except the house. And ever since then, it's being able to be the landlord and be the trainer and do all that. It's given me enough financial freedom that I can really concentrate on things I want to do instead of things I have to do. So I would say in the last, starting in my 50s, definitely. Oh,
nice.
You know, when you were younger, it was fun, but there was a lot more stress. The stress is different now.
Yeah.
You know, you stress about, you know, you don't, back then it was keeping everybody happy and making sure that everything went well at the horse shows and, you know, being able to be successful and, you know, doing all that. That was stressful, very stressful. Now it's gotten much easier and it's way more fun.
As it should be. Yeah.
It shouldn't be harder as you get older. It should hopefully be easier.
And what equestrian businesswoman would you recommend as a guest for this podcast?
Equestrian woman in business. Ah, well, I always like, I guess, to turn it back to people that, you know, I guess I always look at it from the business side of stuff. So somebody else who has a very successful business and does it on all that. You know who have you guys done Stacia?
We haven't.
Stacia, I admire the ability Stacia has to successful business, keeps the customers happy. That's part of being successful business, I guess. Manages it all very, very well and seems to do it, whether it is or not, it might not be, but seems to do it effortlessly. She's a girl and she's very good at this. You never see her sweat.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't see her come unraveled, at least I've never seen her come unraveled. She's very good at the poker face. And I'm not. Oh, I'm horrible at that. Like you
same.
Same.
When all hell's breaking loose, it is written all over my face. So, you know, like I said, she is very, very good at holding those cards close to her chest. And it seems like it's this well-oiled machine that just runs itself. Like I said, I'm sure there's way more to it, but she is quite good at it.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. I would say that would be a good one. Because she seems to be able to figure that out a little bit.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It was fun talking to you. And
thanks so much for having me. This has been delightful.
Hey, if you're over the sugar-coated stories and want the real unfiltered side of the horse world, come ride with us.
I'm Maria Falgioni, former jockey turned businesswoman.
And I'm Cheyenne Wimberly, rail racer and rodeo veteran. We're pulling back the curtain on the horse world, the wins, the wild stories, and the things nobody else wants to say out loud.
Serious topics, zero stuffy vibes.
Search Gallop and Gossip wherever you get your podcast and bring your tea because we've got plenty to spill.
It was nice to talk more with Jen. and have another Jen on the podcast and learn more about her. I know we've talked a lot in Saratoga over the years at the show, and but it was nice to kind of just sit for a while and have a conversation with her too. I like her. She's funny. She's direct. She tells you what's on her mind and gives you her opinion, which is pretty refreshing. So many people are afraid to do that.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy when we get to be with her at the show. And that's why I was like, we talked about having her on finally, because she does such a good job for us at the judging clinic. And she makes everybody laugh, and she's super informative, which I love about that. But also her desire to like help younger generations to like kind of talk about the industry and how she's come up through it and what she did to get where she's at, and the good and the bad and the ugly about things,
right.
You know, get to the nitty gritty. And so I appreciate that she will speak so openly about those kind of things. And I think that this podcast was like after our last podcast. And if you haven't heard it, you should go back and listen to that one. But she kind of echoed the same thing, like about finances and, you know,
right.
Start young and just do it.
Yeah. And she was one of the first people who was talking about that topic to us years ago.
Yep.
In the first Saratoga show, when we kind of had like a round table with riders. And that's what she was saying she thought was, you know, really important to get across to young riders and trainers, is to think about your future now and prepare for it.
Yeah.
It's so hard though, like when you're just starting out to try and convince yourself that you have to get rid of that money and put it where you can't get to it for a long time.
Right. I know. But it is amazing how things add up. After that episode, I actually went on and I was like checking out my 401k and my IRA. And I was like, oh my gosh, like there's more money in it than I even thought was in it, because I just set it and forget it. You know, it comes out of my account. I don't even think about it. My 401k is through work. And so, you know, I look at it a couple of times a year, but it's better if I don't, because I'm just like, wow, that's great. But we're just going to keep going. Like, I'm not going to stop now.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah. So I appreciate that she wants to talk about it. And even saying like, it's not the most comfortable topic to actually talk about, and people kind of don't want to, but you know, she feels that it's so important. So I hope that in the future we can do another round table like that. Cause she's suggested that a couple of more times, like that. She yes. really liked that. When we did that at Saratoga.
Yeah. I think it would be great to do, going back to Jen and talking about financial issues. Like one of the big things she did was save money for 30 years to buy her own farm, because she wanted to be the landlord, as she says it, which I think that's awesome. And to be able to have that gorgeous farm and be able to secure her future in that way too,
yeah,
is really cool. And I love that she has her little side hustle too, that could maybe be her little retirement plan later on.
Right. It's fun. I love that. It's like a way to, release creativity, right? I mean, it's so, the diversify thing is so important. You know, we get stuck in our bubble of equestrian, and even though like, it's like, all equestrians, like it's equestrian still, it's got some theme to it. It's you know, reaching a little bit outside and just like exploring more, you know. I mean, I was thinking about it the other day of all the different things that I do, and it's all equine related, so it never feels like it's a job, and it never feels like I'm doing so many different things, right? Because it's all in the same place. And it's not that I don't have outside interests, because I do. And those help me, you know, they all go hand in hand. I think that that's kind of where she's at with her other business as well.
For sure. And I love that, you know, the the other businesses that we work with or start or have a hand in overlap and just help. They each help the other, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, I don't think this podcast or Equestrian Businesswomen would be as successful if we weren't really entrenched in the industry in our past jobs and our current full-time jobs.
Yeah. I know. It's true. It's we're entrenched in it. It's like all synergistic.
Ooh. Pulling out the vocab.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now spell it.
No shot. You're lucky I said it right. No, but that was a great podcast. It was fun to talk to her, and I hope that people enjoy it and enjoy her as much as we do.
Me too.
And we're going to wrap today. You can find the links to today's guest and the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review.
Now, go diversify your business.